The following seminar was recorded at the Worship God West 2014 conference and features John Martin. It's entitled Advanced Keyboard.
How's everybody doing? Excellent. Everybody got some lunch?
Yes.
Wonderful. I'm so glad I get you on the first day. Because there's a marked difference. I've taught seminars on day two. Day one, definitely the better crowd. A little fresher, just excited to jump in. Thanks for coming. So excited to be able to just, you know, as I said last year, how many were in my seminar last year? Okay, so a few of you. As I said last year, I'm always excited when I get to be in a room with pianists. You know, there's just something. It's because I'm normally in rooms with guitar players and drummers. And so, but once a year, I get to come here and, you know, we get to be pianists together. So today, for those of you who were at the seminar last year, you know, we kind of talked about basics, getting from notes to charts. And where we kind of left off there is where we're hoping to pick up this time and kind of move into something a little bit more advanced and really try to give you some specifics and get into the nuts and bolts of inversions and colorings, chord colorings, and those types of things. Having said that, these types of seminars are just notoriously difficult to address everybody in the room, and the reason why is because everybody's at different levels. So if you would do me the favor of, while we are going through the seminar, if you have a question about something, if I'm either moving too quickly or if I'm not going in depth enough, please just stop me, okay? Just raise your hand and say, hey, I have a question about that, and we'll address it, because I really want it to be effective for you if we can be, okay? Deal? All right, so I just want to get a sense of who I'm talking to here. How many here have been trained classically for more than 5 years? Okay, wow, the majority of you, that's excellent. How many don't read notes at all, just charts? Okay, just one? You know what? That deserves a CD. Do you have either of those?
I don't have either of them.
Which one do you want? Pick. Okay. Excellent, excellent. Thank you for coming. How many are playing in a smaller setting on Sunday? Just you and maybe a guitarist, or you and a guitar and a bass? Okay, so a couple of you. How many are playing with a full band? So drums and everything. Okay, so that's the majority of you. Okay. How many are just here, just want to grow as a pianist? Okay, all right. No guarantees. So what we are going to try to do today is we're going to accent specifically, and the reason why I draw the distinction about who want to just grow as a pianist versus what are you doing on a Sunday is that this particular, in fact, the title of the seminar, Advanced Keyboard, is a little deceiving because as a solo pianist or as an improv pianist, that's not really what we're doing on Sundays, right? I'm sure all of you have discovered that. And that's probably one of the reasons why you're here. Is because you're trying to figure out how to be more effective in contributing to, you know, the guitar wall and the drums. I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I mean that in the best possible way. So what we're going to cover specifically is going to be aimed at that, okay? Our goal is to strive for undistracted excellence and to pursue humility in what we do so that Christ will be honored, which brings us to the question of what is excellence. And in the church, and in church music specifically, we're always asking that question whenever I'm giving musical advice to somebody. Somebody says to me, yeah, but I don't have a pianist that can really execute well. And what is it that we're trying to attain? What are we trying to do? What are we trying to get to? And this is a quote that I read at the beginning of all these seminars from Brian Chappell. It says this: excellence in dimensions of worship expression, in all dimensions of worship expression, including music, must not be defined by cultural standards of sophistication. Let me say it again. Must not be defined by cultural standards of sophistication, but by the ability of the expression to strengthen, deepen, and encourage or develop faith. So that's what we're trying to do. So in the church, we're striving for excellence that encourages the believer's faith. So does that mean you have to be just the most amazing, you know, jazz pianist, and I can sit down and play anything anytime I want? Absolutely not. If it did, I wouldn't be teaching this class, okay? That's not what we're going to talk about today. And what we're going to talk about is how to take the many gears that pianists have and the ability that you have sitting at 88 keys with a full audio spectrum, and how to use that in very specific and often very simple ways. And, you know, the issue that kind of always drags us down as pianists is we've always got these notes, right, that we can pull out anytime we want to. And if you're playing on an acoustic piano, we'll talk about that a little bit later, specifically if you're playing on an acoustic piano, man, you can just mow over anything you want, right? I'm sure all of you discovered that, or someone has discovered it for you. Once again, this may be what has brought you to the seminar. But that's what we want to talk about, is the specific ways in the context of this style of worship. And you may be saying, you know, what are all these qualifications? Well, because that's really what we have to noodle down into, is what is it that's effective? And what you'll find is, and what you probably have already discovered, is that it's often very simple things. Simple, repetitive, and concise ideas. Okay? So that's what we're going to delve into. We are slaves to Christ. Our gifts are slaves to Christ. Two, our goal is to excel in the skill of playing the piano in a band. Again, want to play skillfully, cultivating the gifts God has given you specifically. Want to play humbly, celebrating the gifts that God has given to others in the band. And play passionately, playing as unto the Lord. Those three things are sort of the attitude with which we want to enter in to playing in a band at the piano and at any instrument. Lyrics are fundamental, right? That's key to the approach of playing in a band. Lyrics fundamental. It's truth affecting the heart. That's what we are about. We're here to serve the setting. And we have to be aware of pride and fear of man, both in strength and in weakness, right? To be aware that, you know, I don't quite have the skill set, and what are they going to think, and that kind of thing. But at the same time, also wanting to come and offer our gifts. The art of playing piano for congregational worship is an artistry that serves, as opposed to an artistry that is celebrated for artistry's sake. Okay, it's an artistry that serves. We must be meek musicians. What is the definition of meekness? Somebody give me a definition of meekness. Say it again.
Restrain
power or restrain strength. And so what I'm here to encourage you to do is to take the gifts that God has given you and further them beyond what you might even use on a Sunday morning or at the piano all by yourself, so that you can restrain it in specific ways. Okay, that's a quality of meekness and service in the church that I believe honors the Lord and is excellent, okay, because we come to serve. So we're going to serve the band in the setting. All musicians and piano players need to develop an approach that results in playing less. Playing less. You'll hear me say that at least 15 more times. It always, 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 the best option is to play less. Playing less and tighter, always better than super fancy and loose. And sometimes super fancy and tight. Okay? Less is always, always more in this environment. So we want to shape the song and the sound environment with the piano. The piano is kind of interesting because in this context, and we're talking specifically today about the piano in the band, right? We're not talking about just piano on my own, although we can cover some of that later if you want. What we're talking about specifically is how do I fit in the right way? And what it comes down to is we all need to die to the idea that we are a solo instrument. Okay? Piano in this context is not a solo instrument. And the sooner you make your peace with that and you embrace it, number one, the more fun you'll have, the more qualitative your parts will be, and number three, the better everyone else will appreciate what you're doing. It's amazing if you decide just to play less, how much more it will serve the setting. And players in your band will probably noticeably say, wow, he's like making better choices. And in your mind, you're going, I'm just not playing. Turns out that's brilliant in this case, okay? So I just want to underscore that all the more is that piano, I'm not going to teach you a bunch of like really fancy licks and, you know, super cool things that people are going to go, hey, look at that guy. That's not what it's about. Number one, that's not what our worship music is about. That's not what we're trying to do. And secondly, it's not what fits this style. And if you listen to almost any recording that is quote-unquote popular, or if you listen to any of the Good Sovereign Grace recordings, any of the Chris Tomlin recordings, anything like that, you listen to that stuff, you'll notice that there's very specific choices made. And the piano is almost makes an appearance in every tune, but you don't always hear it. And that's because it's used as a textural instrument. It's used to aid and support what's happening in the percussion section. Okay, because it is a rhythm instrument, right? It is, yes. So we're going to talk about taste, basically. And I'm going to give you specifics. And just to encourage you a little bit, you know, the difference between a good player and a great player is not that the great player has this secret book of chord colors and, you know, and this little cheat sheet that he's checking out all the time. That's not what it's about. It's about developing your ear to the point to where you understand where you want to go. Great musicians know not just when to play and what to play, but when not to play and how to utilize silence. You lay out for the first verse, you come in at the chorus, and suddenly when you come in, there's that lift, right? You chose to lay out instead of just playing from top to bottom, okay? There's just little decisions that you're making along the way that speak to this quality of taste, is what we'll call that. And it's really, again, kind of that meekness. It's a restrained excellence where you're making choices because you don't have to always play the notes, because you're choosing what's going to be most specifically the best option for that setting. Okay? So it's often more about developing your ear than advancing technically. Okay? Often more about advancing your ear than advancing technically. Although, don't forsake one for the other. It's a hand and glove thing. Okay? You need to move them both ahead at the same time. Don't get into the place. If you're coming from a place, most of this room is classical players, don't ever lose your ability to read. Don't lose your ability to sight read, you know, stay on top of that. Don't get to the point to where, you know, if you don't have a chord chart, you don't know what you're doing. I know that probably sounds crazy to some of you. But to some of you who have been playing just chord charts for the last 5-10 years, somebody put a hymn sheet in front of you, you may freeze up. Don't lose that, okay? You want to have that skill set. So let's move into some concepts and application. Concepts and application. Any questions to this point? Okay, let me just pause real quickly, because that's kind of our setup, and we're going to jump in here. What are you hoping to get out? Just give me some ideas. What are you hoping to get out of this seminar? What are some things you're hoping I'll address?
I would like to hear more about, how to get better at playing behind someone, praying.
Okay, great.
What to play.
Okay, we're going to cover that. Anybody else? Just go ahead and shout it out.
If you're leading worship, how to best play while.
Okay.
It's hard to do.
It is. Okay, what else?
I have some ideas. I was wondering if you could give some ideas for practice strategies. I find when I play by myself, I can come up with all cool stuff, and then I can remember it. Or
right. Got it.
Going back to the meditative, the first one, kind of like the long hold, what else is talking and praying.
Okay, so playing behind someone. We'll cover that. Anybody else?
Just understanding, especially if you're playing with like electric guitar, like violin, knowing when to this is the space that could be filled, but maybe not me. Just kind of having to do better.
Right, okay. Okay. Right. Right. Excellent. Good. Good, good, good. Anybody else? We're going to cover all these things. Okay, great. Excellent. Just want to make sure I'm not missing anything. Okay. Concepts and application. We're going to talk about this idea of functional improvisation. It's a little deceiving to say improv, right? Because improv is kind of its own beast, and it really is. It's a different art form. However, what we're doing in a worship setting is a derivative of improv. And really what we're doing in a worship setting is its own little pocket of jazz, okay? Because there's elements of you're having to come up with the right things. It's not always out there for you. In fact, most of the time it isn't. And so what we want to really kind of delve down into is, you know, this functional improv idea. And that's not to say that, you know, in the context of a worship set, I'm just going to bust out this improv moment and, you know, I just can go to it and anytime I choose something, it's just going to sound great. That doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. I've tried that. It's not successful. So what does work is on your own time in rehearsal, when you're with your musicians, is really taking specific steps towards building parts. That's what we're talking about when we say improv, is if I have a CGD written on the top of my line there, you know, I could just play, you know, just in root inversion. Right? So that's what the chart says. So where am I going to go? You know, am I just going to hit that? Or am I going to play with an inversion? Right? So those are small things that a lot of you, I'm sure, are doing already. But that's, you're making decisions there that are really an outworking of improv. It's functional improvisation. And then you're calling it a part. You're writing parts on the fly. And hopefully you're sustaining that to the point where you have some, you know, a certain amount of regularity when you play it so that you really aren't improvising every time, which is something that we can get into as well. And that can be frustrating when you rehearse with your band and, you know, it sounds, man, it sounds great. This is going to be a great Sunday morning. And then you go in there on Sunday morning and it just, what happens? It just flops, right? And after you're like, what happened? You know, it just sounded great on Thursday night. I don't know what happened. So that kind of speaks to what you're talking about, is how do we get to that consistency? So improv by nature is random, but in this context, it's purposeful. It's purposeful, okay? When you play just the fundamental chord structure, it's going to sound very basic, like you heard, right? So we're going to improv, fill it out to make it more beautiful. We're going to put colors in there. We're going to put in inversions. And we're going to try to fit those things in a way that would serve the setting. All diatonic improv is made up of two different things, okay? It's either notes played in succession, or notes or single intervals played one at a time, okay? So if we're diatonic improv, the great thing about it is if I'm going from C, let's say we're going to go C to F. Those little things that we're doing in the right hand, that's melodic, right? So that's the first type. The second type is going to be interval based, which is just going to be steps in between. So you may do something like, just choosing a series of intervals to get to where we want to go, the sound that we want to get to. So it's all functional improvisation is made up of those two things in diatonic keys, which is 99.9%, unless you're in like this really cool church, okay? and if you are, I want to come. So. so keep that in mind as you practice improv, as you're finding parts. Keep that in mind. It's really pretty basic when you come down to it. And for those of you who are classically trained and you're approaching this and you're trying to figure out, like, how do I get to that point where I'm coming to these parts? I hear those other guys playing and they just have these great parts, but, you know, it just doesn't sound like when I do it. And when it does, it's like for 10 minutes and then it doesn't sound good anymore. Well, that's what it's about. That's what it's about. It's those two things, finding those two parts. So you start to work on the keyboard as you practice, which I'm sure you're all doing, right? Yeah, me too. So make sure you're practicing. And when you practice, that's one key thing that you can be doing is thinking about it in those terms. I'm playing a scale. I'm playing intervals. I'm dialing in specific series of notes that I can then write the part for. Okay? So the function of improv is to do a few things. Number one, it's to embellish the chord structure. Right? So we have... I'm just going to move down here. So if we have just a C chord with a root in the bass, that's just 1-3-5 in the right hand, right? So what are some things we could do to embellish that? We could add a 2 chord. Yeah, sure. So we could add a 2 in the right hand. So we're adding that D. We could add a 7. Right? We're still playing a C chord, but I've dropped the 3, I've added the 2, and I've added the 7. So that's what we're talking about doing, embellishing the chord structure. And we'll talk more about that in a bit. We're also talking about accenting the melody or the rhythm. So we're always supporting the melody in worship music, right? I think oftentimes, especially as classical players, you have what 3 elements in music? Who can tell me? We have melody, right? What are the other 2? Harmony and rhythm. So what's the priority, do you think, in playing in a band? Rhythm is number 1. Number 2 is? Harmony. Number 3 is melody. So that's in how you're making your choices. Don't feel as if you have to pound out the melody, okay, when you're playing. They don't need it. Okay, they don't need it. And there's plenty happening. The primary source of the melody in the worship band is going to be your vocal. Okay? So, and this is probably stuff that a lot of you are doing already, but like, for example, Come Now Fount, we don't need to have really anything more than just downs on the changes. So, Come Thou Fount of every blessing, tune my heart to sing thy grace. Right? You don't have to go, Come Thou Fount of every blessing, tune my heart. Right? It sounds silly in context, but that's what a lot of people do. Even if it's just nervous, you know? And they're just going, we're pounding rhythm, and we don't really need to be. We've got a drummer, we've got a guitar player. Your entire band is made up of rhythm instruments. You really only have, depending on your band, you really only have 1 melodic instrument, and that's what? It's the electric guitar. It's the electric guitar. So your piano can be a melodic instrument. That's my daughter, by the way. She's bored. I've heard it all before, Dad. So the piano can be a melodic instrument. In this style, generally it's not. It's not used that way. It's used for rhythm and harmony. Okay? Melody is the 3rd priority. So getting back to improv, accent the melody or the rhythm for your improv moments. And those are specific moments that you're trying to find. You want to create anticipation. In other words, kind of going from section to section. Let's say you're going from, for example, on Come Thou Fount. For thy courts above. And then here we go. Da, 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 right? So we're creating anticipation there with that sus chord going into the key change into the D. That's 1 specific use for improv. Also, to employ specific tonal colors to support the setting. And we're going to delve further into that as we get into chord colors. But just the idea being that if you have a song that is being arranged in a particular way with your guitars are going to take the lead as far as texture. And so you want to really support what's happening there, unless there's a moment where you're talking to your band players and you're saying, hey, this part I'm going to take that, or whatever. But in general, you're really supporting a texture, okay? So to employ specific tonal colors to support the setting. Again, priorities are rhythm, harmony, then melody. So in a band, it's not your job to carry all 3. Find out where you belong in the rhythm section first. Role of the piano player is to fill primarily the upper middle range, okay? It's the upper middle range. And why is that? That's right. That's right. You have on a piano, and you can see I kind of referenced it there for you on the playing in a band section there. The piano, the guitars are 80 to 880 around there, hertz. which is, you know, like in this section. Yeah, you know what? I'm not exactly sure where they're at, but yeah, ish is, it's all kind of right here in this three octave section. So, yep, right into here. So it's, yep. And that's really everything that takes place really in general in music, you know, as you, when you listen to music, and recordings, it all takes place in that mid spectrum. Okay, so how are you going to stand out as a piano player? Well, maybe you don't need to, first of all. Okay, so consider that that's an option. All right? Consider the idea that, hey, I don't need to play, or if I'm going to play, it doesn't need to be like, I'm playing. Okay? And if you're going to choose certain parts that are up here, those are going to poke through because there's nothing in the band that's playing up there. That being said, be very careful, because that can get pretty heroic pretty quickly. All right? So that's definitely going to be your best range for cutting through, but that's where you want to choose those really great parts, you know, and be consistent. Draw something together that's going to be really excellent and repeatable and memorable, all those good things. Okay. All right. I'm gonna move a little quicker here because I want to make sure we cover all this stuff. So learn to take chord charts and simply play the chords again. You know, be satisfied with not necessarily playing all the time. Or if you're playing, that you're playing a more textural part. Try playing only the roots and maybe the fifth in the left hand. Is that what most people are doing in the left hand, playing roots and maybe a fifth? Yeah, okay. That's good. You don't really need to do any more than that. Okay? That's really all you need. You need to work on your time, okay? And you can get into rhythm. You are in a rhythm band. Yeah? Oh, I think it can be very useful in the right context and in the right setting. So we're going to talk a little bit about that in a little bit. But thank you. That's a good question. We will definitely talk about that. So everybody knows what groove is, right? What's the difference between groove and time? Anybody? Relationship to the beat. Yeah, that's right. So time is, right? Groove is, it's feel, it's accents, right? So it's the difference between and right? It's felt, it's a felt thing. So groove is notoriously where pianists like to come in and just clear the decks. You can lay down your groove, drummer, guitars, you can be right there in the pocket. I'm going to be playing to my own time. That's typically where we love to do that. And we love to come in, we love to kind of establish our own groove, and we love to do it right where everybody else is playing, like right here. Yeah. So be very careful with that. The best way to grow in that is to practice with a metronome. For you classical players, you'll know what that is. That's a great, great, great thing. So utilize that tool. Find the groove in what the kick and bass are doing. That's your key. You want to listen to the kick and the bass primarily. And then the snare is your backbeat. So in that you've got snare, kick, 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 snare, kick, kick, kick. So right. So everybody understand what we're talking about there? Okay, good, 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 good. So we need to grow in groove to really, really serve the setting. Interpulse serves as a framework for everything else. And there are many ways to communicate groove. And you can do that if you have to do that. And there are sections where the piano is going to do that. Saying like an intro. Doesn't have to be real complicated, but we're establishing groove here. Right? We could go. Starting to get muddy. Yeah, I'm only playing three notes and I'm already messing up. See that? See what I'm talking about though? That it quickly, this audio spectrum just quickly starts to fill up, and especially on an acoustic piano. You just have a lot of power. So keep it simple and always air for less. You just don't need a lot in this setting. Even when it's just you and say maybe a pad or say a guitar playing a pad behind you, you know, that can be a very effective intro. And it can be very, very soft like that, you know. You're just creating that sense of groove in the left hand and in the right hand, or in one or the other. You could just go in the right hand, right? Or you could try the left hand, but it'd be a little muddy down here, so I'd probably move it up here. Right? So there's a lot of options, but none of them are super complex. It's about finding the most appropriate thing for the song. So practice, here's a good practical application if you're going to practice this. Practice creating groove with fewer notes. You don't need to be, you know, guns blazing, you know. Just be so much nicer, and it's inviting. You know, there's lots of space there, and you're creating a sense of anticipation right there for people to sing. Bless the Lord. Yeah.
Is there a time and a place for what you just played?
Absolutely.
Because, you know, often I'm in the leading by myself on a piano, mm-hmm. and I feel like there's a lot more to fill in that.
Great
space.
Question.
And I get that that's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah. No, it is. It is, and I appreciate that. That's exactly the right kind of question. And in this context, in a band context, it's really just about getting there. It's just if you start there, there's nowhere to go. So, you know, the idea of starting down, and that really speaks more to dynamics, but dynamics is directly relatable to how many notes you play on the piano, right? Oftentimes. So in this, you know, you can start here. And then when you get into, you know, the bigger chorus, or you get into a bigger turn, then you're doing, right? You're building somewhere because you're growing with the song, and you're moving with the content. Does that make sense? So that's really, and even if you're playing by yourself, I would say that. In fact, even more so. I find when I'm playing by myself, you just don't, you know, even though you have the full range of the piano, you're the sharpest tool you have is the ability to utilize your dynamics in a way that really pulls people in and then supports them when they're ready to, you know, to move into, say, that modulation or that last chorus. So that's what I would say. You can provide groove in your right hand or your left hand. More commonly, it's done in the right. Arpeggiation. So let's say... Let's say, Oh Great God. So, Oh Great God, occupy me. So those are all just little arpeggiations. I probably wouldn't choose to play it that way, but that's an option. That can get real busy real fast, and unless you're playing by yourself, you can lose time pretty quickly, you know. So I would keep it on the simpler side. I would just start with blocking. And for those of you who are looking to kind of grow in this idea of, hey, I want to play and sound better and introduce some colors, keep it simple. So on something like this, play with adding colors. And there's some colors on one of the pages I gave you there, adding 2 and 7, 9. Everybody understands the degrees of the scale, right? So when I say add 2 in a C scale, that's going to be the D, right? And a 7 is going to be B. Well, it's going to be a B, yeah, in the key of C, unless it's a minor 7, yeah.
What's between a 9 and a 2?
It's if the 2 is in, it's if the 2 and the 7 are both in there. So if you have, so, mm-hmm, yeah. So if you add the 2, it's a 9 chord. Right. Well, the technical side of that would mean it would have to include the two. So 2 and the 7. That's correct.
Two and seven. Well, nine and seven.
Nine right.
Is
yes.
Same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's the same octave, not outside of the first eight.
That's right. Yeah. 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 Yeah, but that, you know, it doesn't, I mean, it matters, but you know, you know, in practical application, it's really about more where you're throwing those. Okay? So, you know, you can put, say, I know great God, I'm just going to throw in twos, okay? And this is a great way to kind of, you know, introduce this idea of, I'm just going to explore, what does that two chord sound like? And it's the difference between this, oh great God of highest heaven, occupy my lowly heart, right? That's all just inverted triads, okay? 1-3-5s, right? That's what I'm playing. And I'm playing them in inversions so that they're close together, but there's no color chords in that. So it's the difference between that and something like this. Oh, great God of highest heaven, occupy my lowly heart. Own it all and reign supreme. Hear the difference? It's not like a profound thing, but it's a little bit more interesting. Draws your ear in a little bit more. It sets a little bit more of an anticipation, I think. It's not quite as obvious. Having said that, the other great thing about using two chords, say like the great example in something like this, is if you wanted to go from conquer every rebel power, no, let no vice or sin remain, that resists your holy war, you have loved and purchased me, make me yours forevermore. Then if we go into verse 2, I was blinded. Let's say we want to just use all twos in verse 1. Okay, so I have love and say, make me yours forevermore. Right, all twos. Then we're going to go to the third. I was blind. See how much stronger that feels? It's a felt thing. We move from going all this. And then when we introduce that triad, it feels so much more satisfying, right? And that's really how colors can serve you in this context. Another good thing to think about is where your colors want to lead. Your two generally wants to go to, right, the three or the one. Your four wants to go generally to five. Your seven wants to, in a major way, go to the one, right? Go to the tonic. So if you're going to do this, everybody was going to go, right? You just go, ha. So you want to be careful with sevens, but getting into, you know, groove and dynamics and color chords is really the meat of what it is to play in an advanced way with a band, okay, is finding those things. And it's not about pulling out every trick in the book as much as it's about finding nice colors you can throw in. The great thing about a two chord is you can throw it in almost anywhere. You can, so it fits in just about any chord, and it's not going to clash. The other great thing is I can leave a two chord, a C2 chord in my right hand, and I can move on my left, if I'm going to say move to an F, and it can stay there. I can go to the G, go to the A, right? But if I was playing this, it's a different sound. Okay. It's a little bit more obvious, right? But this is nicer. I love two chords. I play them all the time. It's the quickest way to get to something that's a little bit more interesting. Okay, so if you're not already doing that, I would strongly encourage you to implement those. Most of us use the pedal way too much in this context with the band, and again, that's a great way to muddy things up in the audio spectrum as well as to weigh down the groove. You want things to be tight and punchy, you know, when you have your rhythm playing. So, you know, don't come in with, you know, oh, it's just so beautiful, you know. Oh, listen to those sustains. And it's just, you're just filling out just like this aroma. Just filling the room. So beware of what you are communicating as far as groove, for better or for worse. Because it is a rhythm instrument, everything you play is going to communicate groove. It's not really like a pad instrument, right? Everything you play is percussive. It's your only option. So the best way to really bring that into a focus and make it something that's of quality is to just play whole notes. Start with that. Start with just playing whole notes and supporting what's going on. Okay, dynamics, and we talked about this a little bit already, but accents and dynamics. Boy, I can't underscore this enough. This is where I hear the most, I think, probably struggle is in the area of dynamics. And it's, I think, mostly because we're trying to find parts, and I struggle with this too. It's amazing what dynamics can do for you. And again, we go back to our, say, 10,000 reasons. So you're accenting that and then backing off. Right? It's just, it lets it breathe. It's like the piano is telling you something, right? It's kind of a conversation. And it's the way we talk, accents and dynamics, you know. We don't always talk like this, and this is what we're going to do, and what are you doing for lunch today, and that's great, and great to be here at the conference. You know, it's not, you don't do that. You go, it's so great to be here. You know, I love being at this conference. I love worshiping together. There's this back and forth. There's this kind of, as my old music teacher would say, there's this taffy, you know, in good music. And if you listen to great players, one of my favorite players to listen to is Bob. If you listen to Bob play, Bob is a master of dynamics. He plays very little and very few things, but his choices are always great, very tasteful. And it's usually very few things, and if you picked it apart, you'd be able to play it, I promise you. But he's pulling from a very... Yep, noted. He's pulling from, you know, what he's listened to, you know, what he has kind of in his RAM musically. He's not sitting there thinking... What would be great here is a 7. You know, listen to this 2 chord. You know, he's not thinking that because he's gotten to a point to where it's just internalized. And you have to practice to get to that point. You have to practice. So those are there. Do you have a question? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you raised your hand. Okay, so let's move forward. So you let the music breathe, chord to chord. Establish growth and song development. Here, the economy of notes is what I would call that, the economy of notes. Do more with less. And that's a great way to practice as well. Find an idea, stick with it, and then really hone in on how can I make this, you know, expressive and musical and beautiful. Melodic fills, we're going to get this idea of melodic fills and harmonic fills. I'm going to move pretty quickly here because I want to get a couple of you up here. Make it memorable. Make it memorable. Melodic fills, make it memorable. Listen and compliment. Don't step on others. It's so easy to do. And, you know, what I could say about this is if you're in a group of, you know, a collaborative group, and hopefully all you are in places where, you know, you can work with your musicians, you know, you really want to, like, work with your drummer and your bass player and say, what could I play here that would be most effective in groove and rhythm? And they'll be happy to tell you, because, and they know, you know, because you're not driving the band, they are, okay? So, well, in a perfect world, depends on the band, and that's a fair point. And sometimes, you know, you as the pianist feels like you have to drive it because your drummer may not be the strongest, and that's a separate situation. But ideally, you want your drummer to be the person who's driving that, and we're following his time. He's the conductor. Okay, so work with him and try to figure out what the best thing is to make that clean and to come across in a way that works well. Octaves are great on piano, especially in that upper range. You know, we've got... Right, anything you play, and if you're a classical pianist, you probably have those octaves under under your fingers. Practice those. Great example is there's a song, Glorious Christ. So that's right. You know, that's a nice lick. And, you know, I played way more than I probably should there at the bottom, because you've got lots going on in the band at that point. So I'm probably, in reality, I'm only going to play open fifths like that. And then I'm going to come to my next thing. Back to open fifths. That was my big moment. Right? And back again. Here it comes. Right, so you get the idea. Octaves are a great go-to. They poke through nicely. Just be careful with them, because again, they can get pretty heroic pretty quickly.
If you don't have a bass player,
yeah.
Are you allowed to ever move?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Every time I leave the lower register, yeah. It's so empty.
Right, yeah, thanks for asking that question. If you don't have a bass player, absolutely. Utilize that bottom section. Yeah, you can. Oh, sure you can. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, no, you absolutely can. I think, you know, it's a matter of having the consistency of the groove, because your bass player is going to help, you know, establish that. But tonally, you probably don't need, or you have a guitar player?
We have a guitar player, yeah.
Yeah, so tonally you're probably just fine. Yeah. So I think you can, from time to time, you can, you know, depart from that section. You don't always have to feel you got to drive. Yeah, of course. Okay, so there's some practice those. Focus on unique uses of each tone in the scale. You know, again, the great thing about being in diatonic universe is that it's easy to find fills, melodic fills, because it's as long as you stay within the scale, right? So you can really, when you're practicing, you can figure those out. Again, thinking either it's notes in succession or notes in intervals. And you can spend your time in very purposeful practice trying to find those parts. So focus on the unique uses of each tone and scale. Learn your scales and modes. And this really is kind of getting into more advanced, you know, technically. Most of you probably, or a lot of you know your scales, I would think, if you're classical players. Some of you may have let them go a little bit. Try to be familiar in at least the common keys, which are going to be all your guitar keys in a band setting. And try not to let that go. And then secondly, modes. And modes are kind of an interesting thing. Who's familiar with modes? Okay? So a few of you. And the idea of modes is, and I actually gave you a reference, if you look in your packet there. So in the key of C, basically, it's about where your whole steps fall as you go up from C to D to E to F to G to A to B and back to C. So C major or Ionian mode is going to be very familiar, right? D Dorian is... So D is your center, but you're in Dorian mode, so you're C Dorian. Real common one... or I shouldn't say common, but is probably the most used, and you'll find in some worship music, is Mixolydian, okay, which would, in the key of C, start in G there, would just be, so it's basically a flat 7, okay? So, and I know you're kind of looking at me like, what does this have to do with anything? Well, I'll tell you, some worship songs are, believe it or not, written in modes. And one of those would be Revelation Song. So, this is D Mixolydian. So, that's going to be basically a D scale with a flat 7. There's my flat 7. So, instead of the C sharp, I have my D sharp, right? And there, instead of a C sharp, I've got my C natural. So... whole song is in D Mixolydian, okay? So this would be a great thing to do, is to listen to a track like this. I know that's in D Mixolydian. Let me find some things that will work, you know. So, and that's just a good thing to know. And guitar players generally, you know, once they get to a certain level, will get into modes as well. It's very helpful for them to think of a song like that in Mixolydian. Yeah. Most of the time, that's how I figure it out. Sometimes they tell you. But sometimes, like in this song, it's like, is it in D or is it in G?
Right, yeah.
You know, I'm not sure because, you know, it's a flat seven, but it's obviously the D is the key center, you know. So you start to kind of run up the scale, and it's like, oh, you know, and then you can figure that out.
So Mixolydian is the most common one?
Yeah, that's the one that I've found is used, you know, kind of more commonly. And these are all colors, you know, within keys. So this kind of, again, delves kind of into more of an advanced thing. So it's not going to be your most common thing. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to have it. You know, you're just going to be an Ionian, which is just a standard major scale. But if you want to really grow and, you know, and explore some new things, that's a great thing to do. So I gave you a couple references there. You can actually go, I think the URL is on that chart that I gave you at the bottom. You can print out all of the modes for any scale you want. I gave you C and G. So that's just kind of a little rabbit trail there. But so, you know, be encouraged for you classical players. Those scales and modes are very useful. Your classical music training is definitely a great foundation and arguably the best thing that you can have to serve you. So knowing your scales and modes, very helpful when you're playing piano worship setting. It will help you hear the parameters in which a fill can be played depending on the key or the mode of the song that you are playing in. Okay, any questions on that before we move into harmonic fills? Harmonic fills? Okay, harmonic fills. And I'm just giving you, you know, real basic stuff just to kind of, you know, this is stuff that you have to discover on your own. That's the tough thing, is I can give you kind of the language and illustrate what it is, but you really have to develop your ear and practice this stuff to get to where you want to be. Okay, so harmonic fills, here's some examples. I go to sixths a lot. Sixths, and when we say harmonic fills, we're just talking about anything that's got a harmony attached to that melody, right? So melody is going to be diatonic, or it's going to be in intervals. And then if we go into harmonic fills, number one there, you've got ascending and descending sixths. So if that's my tonic, where's the sixth? Yeah, there you go. Somebody knows their intervals. Somebody was in ear training at some point in their life. So that's six. Six are great because you can go straight up and down. And the great thing about six is that they often pass from chord to chord very easily. So it's a really, really nice go-to. It's a great place to explore. However, again, I offer a warning. Be careful how much you use it. Okay? They're beautiful, and I love them. But use them wisely. Ascending and descending thirds, be even more careful with this. Okay? Right? You can find things that are tasteful, but don't, you know, you get too carried away. And then, oh, my six. Those are a couple of good things. A couple of kind of passing chords that are very useful, say in the key of C, and I'm just using this as kind of an example, to go from A minor to G, or your minor sixth to your fifth. That will work generally as a passing tone. That sixth to your five will work pretty well. So if you're going, right? So we go back to the tonic, right? What will also work is a minor 2 to 1 works in a similar way. Not changing your chord, you know, just gives you a good kind of go-to. Those will always, generally will always work. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's the great thing. If they're just riding out on that one chord, da, 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 they're just going to be playing this. That's what you're playing in your left hand, you know. So unless there is a change, and then you got to be careful. But if you've got like a, you know, two bars of your of that one chord, that's a great way to add a little bit of interest, a little bit of groove. A great way to practice is to focus on a particular interval and inversion. So again, you know, practice those sixths, get those thirds under your fingers. You're basically just trying to build a reservoir so that you can pull from something when you get in those moments where you're rehearsing. And you know, and there's lots more that you'll discover and you'll develop as you kind of get your own style happening. So then we can talk about a little bit of voicing. But before we do that, I want to get somebody up here to play. Who wants to play? Volunteers? Okay, come on up. What do you want to play? How about All I Have Is Christ? Does that work for you? Okay. All right, remind me of your name.
Cannon,
that's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, just go?
Yeah. So give us an intro. Everybody welcome Cannon. Okay.
I don't like the intro that much.
Okay.
Can I give my own intro?
Sure, you can build your own intro. Okay.
Well, then we go here.
Okay, well, lead us into the first verse.
Okay, so.
Yeah, thought I knew the way, the sin that promised joy and life, and led me to the grave. I had no one. Great. It's okay. Great. Good job.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm going to have you do it again.
Okay.
What are some things that he did well?
He had a lot of colors.
Okay. Yeah, he had some nice colors in there. What about his intro? Did you guys like his intro? I thought it was very good. And, you know, it was sparse. It supported the singing. It was really, really well done. Couple things that we probably could do on this is on the intro, maybe we could be just a little bit clearer and a little bit more repetitive. So show me what you did again. Right, which is great. And the thing I love about that is that he left this nice space at the end to sort of cue, this is when we're going to sing, right? So it's very clear congregationally, you want to give those cues, you know, in your intros. And then in your verses, some great chords in there. What I would love for you to throw in is a four chord.
Okay.
Or not a four chord, sorry, an add four.
So like mass.
Mm-hmm.
Like that?
No, so like this. So you've got like, let me jump in here. So I once was lost in darkest night, yet thought I to playing two chord the way, the sin that promised joy in life had led me to, this would be a great place for a two chord or a four, an add four right there, led me to, you're adding the D in there, and that's one of my favorite colors. So it's those little things. Two chords, all two chords. Da, or you can go. Da, da, da. But very good. Very good. So those are little things. Anybody else want to try? Anybody else want to try? Okay. I'll get you one other later. So just a couple little things that, and that's perfect to kind of help us as we jump into our colors. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. So, be more specific. It gets annoying to you when?
Well, I thought he repeated it too much.
Okay.
And I was annoyed for the third time, I'm sorry. But so I, when you said the opposite, I thought, oh.
I was speaking specifically to the intro. And that's really...
That's what I was saying.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's pretty important, you know, that we lay down something that is clear. Otherwise, what you can end up with is, you know... was lost and darkest night. Well, how come you didn't sing with me? You know, and that's you know, and I'm exaggerating obviously, but that's what a lot of pianists do. And so it doesn't have to be, you know, like that simplistic. But that's where you need to start. And you know, I mean, you could embellish it more than that if you wanted to. You could go, let me go back to that. So you know, and you know, he was basically staying on the D. What's written there is, you know, 1-4-1-4, which is very common, you know, D-G, D-G. So what's written here is, this is what's on the page. Okay, so that's what I have to work with. So you can create repetition in that that's, you know, more interesting. You can do, you know... You know, you can do some kind of melody and then use the space as an opportunity to bring people in. So
the there was more rhythmic than melodic.
That's right. Yeah. So it's you're just creating a sense of predictability so that, and that's what you would do, you know, in if you were leading, say, a hymn out of a hymn book. You know, you're playing that last line of the refrain, right? So it's very obvious, you know, oh, this is where we come in. And that's what you're trying to do in this setting. That makes sense? Is that helpful? Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So you personally, what do you incorporate keeping the band in mind when you practice?
It's a great question, and you know, there's two things I would say to that. First, it's so important for you to rehearse with the band, you know, and to rehearse first with the band if you can. I mean, if you're going to get familiar with the chart and that kind of thing, that's great. You know, when you're coming in, so that you know where you're going, you're not looking at the first time. Obviously, that's helpful. But when I'm playing with the band, typically. The first time I play it through, I don't play at all. I just listen to what's happening and try to figure out, okay, what's the drummer doing, especially if it's a newer song. I've been playing with the same group for more than 10 years now, so, you know, there's not a lot of mystery left. but that's helpful, you know, and that's actually a luxury, you know, because a lot of times you're having to play with different players and that kind of thing. And I understand that. When I'm in that setting where I have to play with another group, or like, for example, this Friday, I'm subbing for one of the guys to play with the group on the Friday evening session. And it's a group of players I've never played with before. So in that setting, I'm going to err on the side of, you know, being very simple, if playing at all as we rehearse, to try to figure out where I'm going to fit, because the piano in that setting is going to be very textural. So I think that's the important kind of distinction is, you don't always have to play, you know? And, you know, once you determine what those things are after listening, listen first, play second, and then write the part. If you can kind of follow that sequence of events, I think you'll find that there will be more predictability in your playing. And from, you know, from Sunday to Sunday or from whatever you're doing. That make sense?
Mm-hmm. And then you'll just, like, you don't have the luxury of prior practice.
Right. Yeah, so in a setting like that, you know, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to listen to where it is. And it may not be, I don't necessarily mean I'm going to, like, sit there for the entire time they play and, you know, and not let it play at all. But I am going to err on the side of not playing first and go, you know, well, maybe I'll play, you know, maybe I'll block here, and then maybe I'll play, you know, eighths there or, you know, quarters here or whatever. Right.
You know all the music.
Yeah, more than likely. Yeah, more than likely. And that's the other thing, too, is, you know, it's so important for you to just be aware of the music that is in your church's kind of catalog, and to listen to the groups that your church embraces, and be aware of those songs. That will put you miles ahead just listening to what happens on those recordings, frankly. Yeah, another great resource for you, and this is what I'm playing off of here, off this iPad, is multitracks.com. And that's something that's recent, that I found recently through Patrick, actually, who's teaching next door. And it's something he uses a lot in his church. I don't use it, and I don't think I would necessarily use it in my context, except for very sparingly. But as a rehearsal tool, it's fantastic. Because you can get in here and, like, for example, let's go back to 10,000 Reasons. So let's see here. Yeah, I've got this somewhere. 10,000 Reasons. Okay, I want to play through this. I can do that, and I can use the tracks, the original stems. That's not right. I can use the original stems from the recording, which is great, because then I can also reference what that pianist did. So, 1, 2. There you go. Yeah. Add 4 right here. Bless the Lord, oh my soul. Playing within a metronome. And this is probably pretty much how I would play it with a congregation. Add 4. I'm just playing the changes. Da, da, da. I would let the congregation carry this. So then, you know, you're on multitracks.com, you can see here, I've got mixer here with all the parts, which is kind of fun, because then I can turn the guitars down. But I can also turn the piano part up, and I can hear what that guy did in the studio. And isn't that cool? They're different prices depending on the the publishing and all that kind of stuff. But you can get that. You can play it on the iPad. They have rehearsal tracks that are basically custom for particular players. They're even cheaper than that. So it's a great resource if you're really, there's like a particular song you want to check out. And it's like, I really love that. But listen to this part. This is not a complex part, and this is what he plays the entire time. Right? Not complex, but it's beautiful, and it supports the congregation. By itself, I wouldn't listen to that. I wouldn't like throw that on and be like, I want to listen to that piano part. But when it's with a congregation, it's beautiful because you're accompanying the great choir, and you're complimenting what's happening there. And that's really what we're trying to do. So that's a great resource. I can commend that to you. I just recently found that, and I love that. And it's a great teaching tool. If you don't have somebody who can teach you good worship piano, download a few of those tracks. Listen to what's happening. How are they creating that sound? I would recommend that for all worship musicians. Okay. Let's see. We kind of got down. Any other questions on that? We've only got a few minutes left here, so...
I mentioned on Sovereign Grace, they have sometimes, like, Have Mercy on Me completely printed out.
Yeah. Right.
And I have a hard time with the fills and stuff.
Yeah.
I found that resource to be really fantastic, even if I just learn it.
Yes.
And then I don't have to copy it.
Yeah, and because those are pretty much exactly what he plays.
Yeah.
And in fact, I have one of those. I think I have one of those charts.
Really great.
Yeah, I can't remember which one I've got here, but... Anyway, yeah, that is a great resource. So, yeah, I'll just say that for the benefit of the recording. Sovereign Grace Music has just done a huge service to the church because whenever they put songs out, they're putting out resources, just as many as you would need for parts, and if you're a pianist that wants verbatim parts, there's that there for you as well. And so, yeah, take advantage of that if you aren't already. Great stuff. Any other questions? We've only got a few minutes here, and then we got to wrap it up. Yeah.
I'm a firm believer in playing less, listening more.
Yeah.
But when I'm leading for the keys, and everybody else in the band is listening to me,
yeah.
It's hard. I mean, I always end up overplaying.
Yes.
To be obvious enough, like,
yeah.
Where we're going. And it doesn't sound bad because, you know.
Right. That's a great question, and I'll tell you, you know, when I first started leading in the group I'm in now, I came into a group of musicians that had been playing for about 6 months, and I mean total guitar and bass, and they had just picked these instruments up, and drummer had been playing for a little longer than that and could, you know, had basically kind of like two grooves he could play, so every song was the same groove, and, you know, that's what we worked with. And I had that same experience. And I was like, every time I'd feel like I'd have to, you know, at the end of the song, it'd be like, I'd have to bring this in for a landing. We're going to end now. You know, and it's just like, we made it, you know. And so I can totally relate to that. And the only thing I can tell you is it's probably necessary to a degree. But even in that environment, you really want to grow musicians around you. The ideal situation is that you can be the weakest link in the chain, right? That's what I try to do when I'm playing. I try to surround myself with musicians who are better than me because I always learn and they always pull me up and challenge me. That's a luxury, though, you know, oftentimes. So you need to be that person for, you know, that group, is to, you know, give them opportunities and help them grow and help them understand those things, you know, in a gracious and a loving way. But, yeah, it's a challenge. It's a challenge. I understand that. Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that.
Even with Bob, you're like, I don't know, there's more piano than this morning.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like very tactical. There's a fine line.
Well, there is a very fine line, and I wouldn't say that's piano-led. You know, piano-led is a different thing, and piano-led can be done very well, and it's not, one is not better than the other. But what we're talking about really is sitting within the context of a guitar-driven band, because that's 99% of what's happening. But I'll give you a great example. I'll go back to my handy little iPad here. You're familiar with Dustin Kensrue, his project just came out last year, and it's got some great songs on it. One of my favorites is this Grace Alone. And this is a great example of a guitar song. And as a pianist, as I'm listening to this, I'd be like, all right, well, it's been fun, guys. Yeah, the organ is where you want to be. But this is a great example of, because this happens all the time, right? At least in my band it does. And I'm sitting there going, okay, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, I'll go to my octaves, but that's going to sound really cheesy, you know. You know, it's like, it doesn't quite fit in that, right? So what am I going to do? I'm probably going to lay out for the first verse. And tonight, when you see me lead with Enfield, we're going to do a song called How Great You Are. I'm barely going to play it all on that. And that's, so always consider that as your first option. Is, you know, do I even need to play on this? But on this song, it makes a lot of sense to me to jump in, like, at the, let's see where I'm at now. Okay, now we're in the turnaround. So we're about to go into the second verse. One, two, three, so. This is what I would do. Open fifths. Keeping a two and a five in the top hand. And I'm just going back and forth, G to C. You might do this. Here you go. Da 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 But notice I'm being very simple and trying to keep it clean throughout there. And this is what I want you to hear, though, is what the piano is actually doing on this recording. You're going to love this. Did you even know that there was piano in there? But you know what it's doing is it's creating a texture and a bite that if I took it out, you would notice that it wasn't there, but you wouldn't necessarily know that it was the piano I took out. So that's a good example of kind of how, you know, piano is going to be used in this kind of a context. Now, I wouldn't advise that you play that part because you'll fall over in about four measures. But, yeah. Those types of parts are for machines, for the machines. No. All right, we need to wrap it up. One more question. Yeah. 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 Great question. And the best thing I can tell you, in the way that I try to do this is, first of all, to have people within the genre who you listen to and can emulate and pick apart. So for me, that's Bob. You know, my two favorite albums as a pianist are to listen to the T4G albums, because Bob just exhibits some incredible piano work on those, the T4G albums, Together for the Gospel. He did two albums, and it's basically him leading like 8,000 guys in worship. But he's got some beautiful piano parts on there, and I love listening to his choices. Now, he's not playing with a band, but it's great to listen to him, you know, pick apart what he's doing and figure out why it works. Why is that so beautiful? A lot of times I listen to that play and go, wow, that is just, I mean, why am I not choosing those things? You know? Yeah. Sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that's, and then the second thing is to listen just within the style. Third thing is to go a completely different direction, and, you know, because you're going to draw from a well, you can only draw from, you know, as much as you can only go as far as you've already gone, you know what I mean? So if you only have three licks, or you only know, you know, how to play in three keys, that's all you're going to be able to draw from. But if you start learning jazz theory, you start getting into, it's not to say you're going to play jazz on Sunday morning, but you'll get a handle on your intervals, you'll get a handle on your modes, you'll start to have a bigger grasp on music as a whole, and then you have a deeper well from which to draw. Does that make sense? So those are the three things I really try to, when I find myself getting stale, I have to go after things that inspire me and really, you know, practice with purpose. You know, Bob gave me a book a number of years ago called Talent is Overrated, and he talks about it quite a bit. And it's basically the premise of the book is that talent doesn't really exist, that people aren't really gifted, that they just have practiced, you know, more than everybody else. I don't totally agree with that, but the idea is valuable, you know. And they did a bunch of studies that came out and said, you know, in order to be an expert at something, you had to have 10,000 hours of practice. And so, you know, practice, you never get past practicing, you know. And I think in this genre, because it's simple, it's deceiving, kind of deceives us as pianists. And we kind of go, you know, oh, well, you know, playing the same three chords, you know. But you can go deeper. There's more there. So pursue it, practice, be deliberate, purposeful, and ask the Lord to bless your effort. All right, thanks for coming, guys. Hope that was helpful. I'll be around if you have any questions. Thank you.
You've been listening to a seminar by John Martin entitled Advanced Keyboard, recorded at the Worship God West 2014 conference. For more information on Worship God conferences and Sovereign Grace Ministries, please visit our website at www.sovereigngraceministries.org.